It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. One county in rural Virginia has seen some success with a new needle exchange.
If they're coming into the health department, they are told about recovery. If we can help one, you've helped an entire family.
That's coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Three workplace deaths in late December provided a grim end of the year for the coal mining industry. As Jeff Young reports, 12 people died in the nation's coal mines, even as mining employment dropped to a record low.
Just a few months ago, the U.S. coal mining industry was on track for what would have been its safest year on record. Then came December. Four miners died after separate incidents, three of them in just the last 11 days of the year. That brought the total number of fatalities in 2018 to 12.
It's a reminder to enforcement agencies, certainly, that you always have to be vigilant. And for each one of those families, you know, it's an unspeakable tragedy.
That's Kentucky lawyer and mine safety advocate Tony Oppegard. He noted that more than half the fatalities in 2018 came in the Appalachian coal fields, four of them in West Virginia alone. Even with the grim numbers from December, 12 deaths in a year stands as the second lowest number of coal mining fatalities. The lowest number, 8, came in 2016. 15 miners were killed in 2017. Generally, the industry has seen a downward trend in workplace deaths in recent years compared to just a decade ago. But Oppegard says he does not think that is due to improved mine safety. Rather, he says, it's a reflection of reduced mining employment.
I think the low number says more about the decline of the coal industry. Certainly in Appalachia, there's about one-fifth the number of mines that are operating today that operated were in operation 5 or 6 years ago. So I think that's the major reason.
A comparison of mining employment and fatalities over the years demonstrates his point. Resource data reporter Alexandra Kanick ran the numbers from official government data. She found several previous years in which fatality rates were lower, even when the number of total fatalities was higher. In 2009, for example, 18 coal miners died on the job.
But the industry also employed more than 53,000 more miners than it did in 2018.
Kanick calculated the rate of fatalities per 100,000 workers. That's the standard for measuring death rates.
So the death rate in 2009 was 13.4 compared to 14.9 in 2018, even though 2018 saw only 12 mining fatalities.
The government numbers on employment for the year are not yet final, but if the preliminary figure stands, 2018 marks a low point. About 81,000 people were employed by mine operators and contractors. That's a record low, and about 1,000 fewer than were employed by coal in the last year of the Obama administration. Even as employment drops, mining remains a dangerous job, and Appalachian miners are also facing a surge of black lung disease. In Congress, the House Committee on Education and the Workforce oversees the Mine Safety and Health Administration, or MSHA. The new chair of that committee has promised congressional hearings on black lung. MSHA officials declined a request for an interview for this story. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Jeff Young.
Many Appalachian communities struggling with the opioid epidemic have been slow to get needle exchange programs started. But officials in the southwest corner of Virginia acted quickly, working out of fear for what could happen if they're in their communities if users continued to share dirty needles. Mallory Nopain from Radio IQ and Virginia Public Radio visited Wise County, where people have already seen a positive impact.
For years, substance abuse counselor Shirley Smith has worked with the homeless and addicted in Big Stone Gap. She's heard stories about how people get the needles they use to inject illegal drugs.
You know, but I had someone to tell me they went on a riverbank where they knew where the addicts used and all, and they went and picked these needles up and then resold them.
On the illegal drug market, dirty needles come cheaper than clean ones. Nurse practitioner Teresa Tyson has seen the impacts of that. She runs the nonprofit clinic, The Health Wagon. people with substance abuse disorder will come in with abscesses and skin infections. But that's not the worst of it.
That's new for us, seeing all kinds of hepatitis C come into the clinic. Yes, absolutely. And the treatment for that is very, very expensive, and the medications are over $100,000.
Tyson is well known for organizing the once-a-year remote area medical clinic. But she treats underserved patients all year long. She says Virginia is a wealthy state.
However, that wealth did not make it here to the mountains. We have a culture of extraction, and so once the coal was extracted, there's not a lot of resources that are left here. Our patients, they face a lot of like healthcare disparities in the region.
Disparities that Tyson has seen evolve into drug use, and now the rise of hepatitis C. For health officials, the fear is what could follow. According to the Center for Disease Control, parts of Western Virginia are some of the most vulnerable in the country when it comes to the rapid spread of HIV.
We know the possibility is coming, and we would not have enough, you know, resources to deal with that. And the reason that the harm reduction or needle exchange program was such a wonderful concept to have here so that we can get ahead of it.
Users can now go to the local health department for free, clean needles. Tyson has been referring not just her patients with substance abuse disorder, but also diabetics.
Unfortunately, our diabetics are forced with, you know, like reusing dirty needles and things like that. I mean, you know, it happens.
The exchange is run out of a brick building tucked among the trees on a dead-end road. In its first 5 months, about 30 people have visited regularly. To protect privacy, I couldn't record inside, but Counselor Shirley Smith has been there.
You go in the front and they'll lead you into the back where the needle exchange program is taking place.
Participants get canisters with clean needles, plus an ID card they can show police if they're stopped. So far, staff have collected far more needles than they've handed out.
And then they are asked if they'd consider recovery, so...
Some say yes. One has already been referred to Smith. Another counselor I talked to has also been in touch with a couple participants. Smith says the program helps plant a seed in people they couldn't otherwise reach.
If they're out on the streets using, they have no clue if there's help in recovery. But if they're coming into the health department, they are told about recovery. If we can help one, you've helped an entire family.
A handful of the needle exchange users in Wise have started treatment programs. One is sober and no longer injecting drugs. In Wise, I'm Mallory Nopain.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. I'm Teresa Wills.